On the small bodice, the pearls were worked in a shape Ged knew. The double arrow of the god brothers of the Kargat Empire, surmounted by a king's crown. The old woman, wrinkled, dirty, clothed in an ill-sewn sack of sealskin, pointed at the little silken dress and at herself and smiled, a sweet, unmeaning smile like a baby's. From some hiding place sewn in the skirt of the dress, she took a small object, and this was held out to Ged. It was a bit of dark metal, a piece of broken jewelry, perhaps, the half-circle of a broken ring. Ged looked at it, but she gestured that he take it, and was not satisfied until he took it. Then she nodded and smiled again. She had made him a present. But the dress she wrapped up carefully in its greasy rag coverings, and she shuffled back to the hut to hide the lovely thing away. Ged put the broken ring into his tunic pocket with almost the same care, for his heart was full of pity. He guessed now that these two might be children of some royal house of the Kargat Empire. A tyrant or usurper who feared to shed kingly blood had sent them to be cast away, to live or die on an uncharted islet far from Karagoat. One had been a boy of 8 or 10, maybe, and the other a stout baby princess in a dress of silk and pearls. And they had lived, and lived on alone, 40 years, 50 years, on a rock in the ocean. Prince and Princess of Desolation. But the truth of this guess he did not learn until years later. The quest of the Ring of Ereth Akbi led him to the Kargat lands and to the tombs of Atwan. His third night on the isle lightened to a calm, pale sunrise. It was the day of sun return, the shortest day of the year. His little boat of wood and magic, scraps and spells, was ready. He had tried to tell the old ones that he would take them to any land, Gaunt or Spivey or the Toricles. He would have left them even on some lonely shore of Karagoat had they asked it of him, though Kargish waters were no safe place for an archipelagan to venture. But they would not leave their barren isle. The old woman seemed not to understand what he meant with his gestures and quiet words. The old man did understand, and refused. All his memory of other lands and other men was a child's nightmare of blood and giants and screaming. Ged could see that in his face, as he shook his head and shook his head. So Ged that morning filled up a sealskin pouch with water at the well, and since he could not thank the old ones for their fire and food and had no present for the old woman as he would have liked, he did what he could and set a charm on that salty, unreliable spring. The water rose up through the sand as sweet and clear as any mountain spring in the heights of Gaunt, nor did it ever fail. Because of it, that place of dunes and rocks is charted now and bears a name. Sailors call it Springwater Isle. But the hut is gone, and the storms of many winters have left no sign of the two who lived out their lives there and died alone. They kept hidden in the hut, as if they feared to watch when Ged ran his boat out from the sandy south end of the isle. He let the world's wind, steady from the north, fill his sail of spellcloth, and went speedily forth over the sea. Now, this sea quest of Ged's was a strange matter, for as he well knew, he was a hunter who knew neither what the thing was that he hunted, nor where in all Earthsea it might be. He must hunt it by guess, by hunch, by luck, even as it had hunted him. Each was blind to the other's being, Ged as baffled by impalpable shadows as the shadow was baffled by daylight and by solid things. One certainty only Ged had, that he was indeed the hunter now, and not the hunted. For the shadow, having tricked him onto the rocks, might have had him at its mercy all the while he lay half-dead on the shore and blundered in darkness in the stormy dunes, but it had not waited for that chance. It had tricked him and fled away at once, not daring now to face him. In this he saw that Ogion had been right. The shadow could not draw on his power so long as he was turned against it. So he must keep against it, keep after it, though its track was cold across these wide seas, and he had nothing at all to guide him but the luck of the world's wind blowing southward, and a dim guess or notion in his mind that south or east was the right way to follow. Before nightfall, he saw, way off on his left hand, the long, faint shoreline of a great land, which must be Karagoat. He was in the very sea roads of those white, barbaric folk. He kept a sharp watch out for any Kargish longship or galley, and he remembered, as he sailed through red evening, that morning of his boyhood in Ten Alders village, the plumed warriors, the fire, the mist. And thinking of that day, he saw, all at once, with a qualm at his heart, how the shadow had tricked him with his own trick, bringing that mist about him on the sea, as if bringing it out of his own past, blinding him to danger, and fooling him to his death. He kept his course to the southeast, and the land sank out of sight as night came over the eastern edge of the world. The hollows of the waves all were full of darkness, while the crests shone yet with a clear, ruddy reflection of the west. Ged sang aloud the winter carol, and such cantos of the deed of the young king as he remembered, for those songs are sung at the festival of sun return. His voice was clear, but it fell to nothing in the vast silence of the sea. Darkness came quickly, and the winter stars. All that longest night of the year he waked, watching the stars rise upon his left hand and wheel overhead and sink into far black waters on the right, while always the long wind of winter bore him southward over an unseen sea. He could sleep for only a moment, now and then, with a sharp awakening. This boat he sailed was in truth no boat, but a